Jackson Bathgate is a professional skier on the Freeride World Tour, the big leagues for big mountain skiing. He grew up in Whistler with his twin brother, Cooper, and they were both skiing since the day they could walk. We talk about the prospects of making a living as a skier, the risk-reward calculation of such an extreme sport, and the odd physical altercation that comes with being a tow truck driver in the off-season in Whistler. Hope you guys enjoy this one. What's up, dude?
What's up, buddy? How you going?
Good, and you?
Good, man. It's been a long time, eh?
Yeah, a couple of years, eh?
Yeah, probably since we went snowmobiling and Revy together.
Yep. Man, how'd the comp go?
It was good. I got eighth out of like 30, 33, I think.
That works.
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, the judge, it was a little bit funky, but you know, I don't need to get into that. I've already let people know about it. So.
Oh, really?
Well, there's just like, they made some calls that they said, like, you have to do this or you'll not get a score. And a couple guys didn't do it. And they're like, we'll just give them a score anyways. So yeah. Just need some consistency.
Yeah. That's always the tough thing, eh? When it's judged.
It also sucks because I like all the guys doing it, right? Like, I don't want to screw anybody over. I like the guys that are doing that stuff, but it's just like, man, like if I could have done that, you know, I maybe would have too.
right. Yeah, it's funny how it's unlike skiing, you know, hockey or something where it's like super competitive and it's like fuck those guys, where it's like everyone's a buddy, including the judges and everything, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I went to the bar after with all the judges and had to eat my words and, you know, say sorry for freaking out, boys, but you know, like we need some consistency here.
Yeah, totally. Do you have a time you got to be off here by?
No, not really. I'm just chilling, man. I'm just got home yesterday, so.
Right on. Well, yeah. If you're good, we'll fire it up.
Yeah, man. I'm easy.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we should start. You just had a wild trip to Georgia in the caucuses.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It got wilder after we talked, man. My trip home was even harder than getting there.
Yeah. How long did it take you to get there and home and stuff?
Getting there, I think it took me a little over 50 hours. And then coming home, I was just under 70.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a couple canceled flights and, you know, a night in the airport that was unexpected and, you know, bussing around, crossing the whole country in a guy's car.
Oh, man. Well, we'll get back to that because I want to with everyone. I want to start like kind of at the beginning. Tell me, you know, where you grew up, what your parents did for a living. Kind of paint the picture of what your, you know, early days were like.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Whistler, BC. You know, kind of north of Vancouver there. And my dad actually, he lived in Ontario. He was a coach for Ski Canada, like for the ski racing part of Team Canada. So he did that for a bunch of years for Alpine Canada. And then my mom works for Bruce Allen Talent. So she's works for a record label. And, you know, right now she's managing the Offspring, which is pretty cool. Yeah, but so she manages like Michael Bublé and Jan Arden. And then her big one right now is the Offspring. So it's pretty wicked.
Wow. How'd she get into that?
She's working for a radio station in Ontario. And then she just met the right people, and then they said, oh, come on out to Vancouver, and we got a job for you. So she did, and then she had us, and they were like, oh, you can go remote most of the time and live in Whistler. So she took the opportunity and bought a house up there.
Wow. So how did they decide on Whistler? Because you guys live in, like, Whistler Village.
Yeah, right on the mountain pretty much. Well, my mom and dad used to come up and ski a lot in like, Whistler's early days. So they really liked skiing in Whistler already, and you know, the housing prices were right in the 90s. They weren't as crazy as they were now, so kind of financially made sense over Vancouver, and then now it's just ridiculous.
Man, so did you, like, you know, you only know what you don't know or whatever, but like, did you realize how special it was to grow up like in Whistler, you know, walking to the hill?
Not until I got a little bit older. And as a kid, it was just like, man, this is awesome. Everybody must have a life like this, man. Like,
yeah. So you guys, I assume, and for people who don't know, you got a twin brother. So you guys were on skis, what, at like 1, 2 years old?
Yeah, I think 2 years old, my mom was dragging us down the hill in our one pieces, picking us up off the ground and putting us back on our feet.
Wow. So, were there any other sports for you guys, or was it all focused around skiing?
When we were younger, we used to play hockey because my grandpa used to play in the NHL. So he's his jersey's retired in the rafters at Madison Square Garden and stuff. So we had to do that when we were younger, and then we kind of made the call that we were more into skiing, and we were more in the right place for skiing than playing hockey. Like the level in BC is just not quite the same as it is in Ontario for hockey.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
and then
Yeah.
we were a little older, we got pretty into lugeing for a couple of years.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not, we competed in that for 3 years and kind of put skiing on the side burner, and then it just was too expensive compared to skiing. Even it's like it was insane. It was just traveling all the time and going to different venues where, there's only like 25 tracks for that in the world, right? So you're traveling all over. But then we decided that skiing is always on the same weekend, so we kind of had to pick one or the other. And we were a little more attached to skiing, a little more into skiing, and it was also a lot more fun.
Yeah, for sure. I imagine the luge is probably like more just scary, and you're just relieved afterwards. Is it
And
like
it's
that?
just like the people are all like, go, like I want to go to the Olympics, so I'm gonna push myself really hard. And you're on a team, but like you're not really teammates, so to speak.
I see. And that's got to be the, not the only reason, but pretty much the only reason anyone's doing that sport. Like they're gonna go to the Olympics.
Yeah,
That's the idea,
I think that
right?
was most of the people's goal to try and get to the Olympic team. Like a lot of the guys I used to race against for a couple of years in Luge, they're all on the Olympic team now.
Right.
So,
Right. So when did skiing get serious for you guys? When was it like, okay, we're going to be in a program, and how did you kind of make that decision?
we kind of were always in like the Whistler Ski School when we were younger, and then when we were about 10 or 11, we joined this program called MAP, which is, they called the Mountain Adventure Program. So you kind of would either go into like more serious ski racing, or you'd go into that side of things after like level six when you're a little younger. So we did that for a couple of years, and then we were kind of like at the skiing a little better than most of the guys in that program, and we had our neighbors across the street. They're also twins, actually. We were all skiing, the four of us, and we were kind of all like pushing each other, and we were kind of like the best guys in that program at the time. So then we got asked by the coach of the Whistler Freeride Club. He said they'd make an exception of the age limit and that we could come up and try and do freeride with the older guys, and that's a little bit more like competitive. So we were all the youngest people to do that, and so we made the switch over to freeride. And then 2 years after that, we all started competing with the Whistler Freeride Club in the junior events. So then we kind of all started to take it pretty seriously.
Right. And, living in Whistler, skiing Whistler, you must have been exposed to like all the kind of, heavy guys, all the most talented guys in the sport. Like you could, see them on a random Sunday or something out there riding.
Oh yeah, any powder day you go up to Peak Chair and you just watch the show, right? You're like, damn, I want to do that.
Right. So it was always that free ride, and I guess for people who don't know, explain what free ride is compared to, what you'd see maybe in the Olympics for park skiing or something like that.
It's basically just, they give you a face with some cliffs on it, and maybe some jumps and trees and stuff, and you get to pick your own line down, and you can go as hard or as not hard as you want, and the judges score you on a scale of 0 to 50. So it's all judge sport, but you get to pick your own line, and there's no there's like there's rough categories, but there's no really rules, so to speak. Once whatever's on the venue, you're allowed to work with and make happen for you.
Right. So you guys start competing, and then there's Junior Freeride World Tour. Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's like the they call it it's the IFSA Junior Tour, so the International Free Skiers Association. They're the junior event because they also run the adult league here as well. But so then in that league, when you're 12 to 14, you kind of just compete in that, and then every year there's a North American Championship. So for the Canadians and Americans, all the best guys come together at the end of the year when you're under 15, And then when you're between 15 and 18, you can do that as well. But then the top three or four from each country go to the Junior Freeride World Champs, which
Okay.
is usually in Europe somewhere. So I was there in 2015 and 2016 for the Junior World Champs.
Right. And I watched your run. It was 2016 that you won it.
Yeah, 2015 I crashed, and 2016 I came back with a chip on my shoulder, and I managed to take the win there.
Yeah. And it's got to be like, you know, watching this sport, you know, fairly, you know, not religiously, but I'll watch it, you know, each event, I'll watch the highlights. Like it's got to be one of the sports where it's like it's all or nothing. You know, you crash or you win. Like, you know, I don't know. Maybe you can tell me more of that mindset, you know, how conservative you play it, or is it just all out?
Kind of depends on the event, really. Like, so for the Junior World Champs, right, it's kind of a lone standing event, so you kind of just you want to go as hard as you can, and you want to win that event. But in some of the series events, you're like, well, I need a top five to make it onto the world tour, versus you need to win. So sometimes you're going for consistency, but a lot of the time you're kind of going for that first, second, third, right? You kind of need a podium to make it happen.
Right. So yeah, going back to the Junior World Championship. I watched your run, and dude, maybe I'm wrong, but the conditions looked bulletproof.
Oh,
And
yeah.
yeah, like, you know, I don't think people, you know, people who aren't following the sport, you know, they'll watch a ski video and they'll see all these guys hucking big cliffs in, you know, great snow. But you guys have to ride whatever's there.
Yeah, that year was crazy. It was like +8 degrees when that comp was going off. So it was actually supposed to happen the day before, but they said it was too icy to run the event. So they delayed it a day, thinking that it was going to be even warmer and it would actually turn more to slush. So yeah, it was definitely not soft that day. It was like, you're sinking like an inch in the snow, and then it was just like pretty firm ice underneath. They had to move
Yeah.
the venue is supposed to be on the ski hill, but they didn't have enough snow to run it on that venue. So they made us like we had to hike like 6 hours up to the bottom of the venue from the valley, like into the back country, and then they would pick us up in a helicopter at the bottom of the venue and bump us to the top. So it was a crazy couple of days doing that. We were hiking like, 8 kilometers a day with all your ski gear up dirt, up like goat tracks.
Geez, that must have worn some guys out.
Oh yeah, especially because we had to do it for the inspection day, and then the day the comp was gonna happen, and then finally for the actual competition day. It was like 3 days of hiking all the way in there.
Man, oh man. So that's yeah, 2015 and 16, and that's basically the highest level you can go at that age, right? And you
Yeah, in
win
a
that
junior,
comp.
that's kind of the peak for sure.
Right. So at what point, I mean, I'm sure it might have happened a little bit before then, are you kind of conceptualizing this like, okay, you know, I love to ski, but there might be something here, there might be a career here.
A career is a funny way to put it, but I don't know if there's a
Yeah,
career
we'll
here
get
even
into it.
now. But
Yeah.
kind of just like once, winning the Freeride Junior Championships there, kind of just set it in my head that one day I would like to make it to that big league, and go through the qualifiers and, kind of grind my teeth out on the qualifiers and show them that I belong on the world tour. But so before that, I kind of, I was just kind of doing it for fun. I never really thought that I'd actually make it there, but then winning against, everybody in Europe and North America, it kind of keyed in that, maybe I actually can do this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, you alluded to it there. You know, there's so many sports that, you know, you're the best guy in the world and you still have a job, right?
Oh
So
yeah.
how do you, you know, I guess balance that now, obviously spending so much time, you know, thinking about it and spending time traveling and going to all these events. How do you balance that in your mind, you know, as far as making a living?
Oh man, I think in my case, I work all summer, work all spring and fall, and then kind of take most of the winter off. I've had a my boss in the past been pretty stoked on it, pretty supportive about skiing and stuff. He's pretty down to let me kind of, work when I can and go traveling when I need to, sort of. But for me, man, I don't make any money off this sport. I just do it purely out of passion.
Yeah. Are there, you know, so I guess explain to me and explain to the viewer how the Freeride World Tour works, because it was your first year there, and then how you get invited, how you qualify, how the whole deal works.
So once you graduate to the adult tour, they do what's called the Freeride World Qualifier Series. So then now they changed it 2 years ago. So I actually went through this new structure that they have now. But so in the first half of the year, anybody can sign up for events, and there's four stars, which are the highest ranked events that you can do. Like, they're worth the most points. And then three stars, two stars, and one stars, and they're, you know, worth a bit less points for your overall score. And then until I think mid-February or early March, you do whatever comps you want, and then they take the top 25 guys that in the rankings, and then they do three more competitions head-to-head. And then they also get the guys that got cut off the Freeride World Tour and a couple of guys that they think are really cool, and they add them into the mix too. So it ends up being about 30 or 33 guys, with about five or six World Tour guys and then 25 qualifier guys that go head-to-head in three last events. And then they take top four ski men out of those 33.
Wow.
Yeah. So you can have a sweet beginning of the year. You can be first overall, and then you still don't make it because you didn't put it together in the second half of the year. Right.
Right. So that's what you did last year.
Yeah. Last year. Yeah. So I did, I was, I think, eighth going into they call it the Challenger Series, which is the last three events. And then I won the home stop in Whistler, and then I got 10th in New Mexico. And that was just enough for me to squeak in there and punch my ticket with third overall.
What did that feel like when you really did it?
It felt crazy because actually the third event I crashed, and I was convinced that I threw it all away because it was like just like the right guys needed to do well, and the other guys that were right in the mix needed to not beat me for me to make it. And so I was like, well, that's not going to happen. Like, I'm not making it this year. And I like left the ski hill and was like pretty bummed out watching the live stream at the hotel. Then I saw that I made it, and I was like, holy, like, I actually made it. Like, are you serious? Like, there's no way. So it felt pretty damn good.
Yeah. So then you get what, kind of all summer and a little bit of fall to kind of prep for the season?
Yeah. The first event was in January, mid January. So kind of all summer, then fall, and then start skiing pretty hard as soon as the hills open up and start, you know, practicing and all that.
Yeah. I mean, that must have been a great, you know, fire under your ass for the whole summer to, you know, get fit, stay fit, you know.
Work hard.
yeah, I guess, yeah. Work hard, make enough money. Yeah. So go back to last year, you've got this spot now, and do you go and, you know, approach sponsors and different people for support saying, hey, I'm gonna be on the world tour?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. So like going into the last season, I got dropped by my main like outerwear sponsor. They were just like, we don't have the budget for this anymore. Like, we can't give you any gear. So I was like, cool, like whatever, man, that's fine. So I was actually going through last year just privateer, like paying for all my own gear, like no sponsors at all. So I was kind of fine with doing that again. I was like, well, if anybody wants to like hook me up, like that's fine. Like, you know, they can, but I'm not going to go and reach out and say, hey, I'm super awesome. Like, I can do this, this, and this for you. Like, I'd rather just do my thing. And, you know, if it works out, works out. But then over the summer, I was like going into the fall still with no sponsors. And then all of a sudden, like in October, it just all kind of fell into my lap. And, you know, I'm riding for Orage now, which they've been awesome. Then K2's kind of hooking me up. I had another ski sponsor earlier this year, but the gears didn't really work for me. So I kind of told him that, you know, man, like I appreciate it, but, you know, like it's not really working for me. So I'd rather do something that I'm comfortable with. But, and then like Backcountry Access, they gave me some stuff and they've been pretty helpful. So it's been pretty awesome so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think anyone would be happy, even if you, like you said, you know, you don't want to over promise if you're, you know, not going to do it, you know, right. But, you know, someone in your position should certainly be getting, you know, free gear, and you're on TV.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's funny because it's super different versus North America to Europe. If you're on the Freeride World Tour, like lots of the European guys are making like, you know, actually good money, like enough to actually not work. Because all the European like side of the brands, they have more money to pour into it, and they're happier with the like this. There's one stop in North America and there's four in Europe. So you know, it's like their marketing is like, it's a lot easier to incorporate the World Tour into their marketing than in North America. It's like the same guy on a contract or the team could be making $5,000 in North America and they'd be making $35,000 if they were in Europe.
Right. Right. So, I guess how many guys are on, and how does it work with making the cut? I imagine it's a little bit like golf. So how does the season work?
There's supposed to be four events this year and then the cut, but because of snow, they canceled the one in Andorra and Spain. And then, like super last minute, they moved it to Switzerland, like 4 days before the event. They were like, yeah, everybody get to Switzerland. Like right now we just confirmed it, but don't tell anybody. Okay, let's go to Switzerland then. And so then we did, Verbier was the first one, and then Golden was stop number two, and then Georgia stop number three. So then they take your top two results out of the three, and then they take the top 11 out of 22.
Okay. So 22 guys compete at all three of those, and then 11 guys move on from that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then what does the rest of the season look like? So now it's narrowed down to 11 guys?
Yes, and they just did Fieberbrunn as the first stop of their finals last week. And then they, because there's half the people now for that one, they change it from a one-run format to you get two runs and best one counts.
Okay.
And then next week, the finals in Verbier again. Okay. So that's where they did the first comp of the year this year.
Right. So it's kind of like playoffs. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Certain guys don't make the playoffs.
Yeah. And then the Challenger Series, if you get cut, then you get to go right into the Challengers. You don't have to qualify for it.
Yep.
So it's kind of like a second chance round, so to speak. Like if you get top four, then you get to come back on. And if not, then you have to go back to the whole thing next year.
Right. And you're so familiar, obviously, you know, with the program, but what was the feeling like kind of showing up to the first event? Like, was it like, ooh, this is big time?
Well, the first event is supposed to be on space. They call the Bec de Ross, which is where the finals is actually going to be. And it's a pretty crazy face. I was pretty intimidated by that one, but they ended up moving it to the they call it the Petite Bec, the small one. Okay. So it was a little bit less intimidating to ski, but man, the hike up there was absolutely insane. It's like death-defying hike up. And they're like, oh, like, because they told us so late that we were going to Verbier, and then they also said, oh, you don't need harnesses, don't bring harnesses. So nobody brought harnesses, and then it was like roped the whole way up, and you're like climbing straight vertical, and you're like, I fall, I'm gonna die. it was pretty nuts.
Okay, so yeah, like, and I don't know that much about, you know, the series. So do you have to hike every face?
Yeah, if they say if the conditions allow for it, they want us to hike up.
Wow.
Yeah, so that one, it was like an hour and a half hike for that one, for the first one.
How long after you guys hike do you drop in?
But you can hike up as early or as late as you want, right? They just say, don't miss your start or you lose all your prize money and you go last.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I guess they didn't make you lose your prize money if you missed your start last year. And a bunch of guys, if they were going first, they just missed their start because they prefer to go last. So then they were right. Like, all right, like we got to impose a financial penalty here. Us, you guys are just going to keep doing this.
Right. So what is some of the strategy there? What's the advantage to going last? And is it simply just seeing everyone's run?
Yeah, well, you can kind of, like, a lot of the events, you can watch the live stream from the top. You know, there's good enough service. So you can see what other people are scoring and you can kind of decide, you know, how hard you have to go to, you know, get a top five or a top three or whatever you're chasing. So it definitely is a little bit beneficial, but I prefer to not see what other people do and just stick with my plan.
Yeah. So it's got to be like a whole ton of prep work because, you know, anyone who's ever skied anything remotely steep knows that it's all blind.
Oh, yeah, you can't see anything.
So, yeah, and, you know, the first time you ski something steep, it's like, you know, am I even in the right spot kind of thing, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
How much prep work goes into, like, looking at the face and planning out your run?
You spend a while looking through binoculars and stuff, but you're not allowed to go on the face at all. You can only look from the bottom and the top. But so it's like you look from the bottom and then you go to the top and you're like, oh man, like what am I even looking at? Like this looks right. So different. So it's like it's pretty intimidating for the, you know, because that was the first time I'd done it since I won the junior world championships. Because in North America, you're allowed to go on the course to check it out, but in Europe, they just let you look from the bottom. So it was a little bit of a change for sure, but I kind of figured it out. I was getting the hang of it by the end of the year.
Yeah, you didn't go off the wrong cliff or anything?
No, surprisingly, no. I actually ended up where I thought I was in every event, which was, you know, felt pretty good.
Yeah. And that obviously happens to guys.
Oh yeah, you can tell sometimes people will get lost and they'll start skiing really slow because they're like, oh, where, what am I about to ski off?
Right. So, I guess how did the season go for you?
Went okay. It went, you know, not as good as I was hoping, but you know, I had a lot of fun and I didn't crash, but the level on the world tour right now is just insanely high. Like there's for two events in a row now, they've had more than seven guys score above 90 points out of 100.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's the Georgia event. That was the first event they've ever had more than like three score in the 90s. And now they had two back to back where seven guys scored in the 90s.
Wow. So where'd you end up, like on the cut or in the season?
I ended up 15th out of 22,
Okay.
so just down from the just on the bad side of the cut. But
Yep.
all my buddies were also on the bad side of the cut, and they all were throwing it down as well. There's like five of us that didn't make it that are back doing the challengers again.
Right. So is that something, after doing it for the first time, is that something you're looking to do again next year and indefinitely, or do you have a 5-year plan for skiing?
It'd be fun to do it at least once more time for a year here, a year there. But I mean, it's not necessarily the end all be all for me. I'd rather just enjoy skiing and have fun doing it, more opposed to trying to get on the world tour. I think that's kind of how I made it last year. I was just kind of having fun with it, and I was working whenever I wasn't skiing. So when I was at these events, it was like a vacation, and I was just
Right.
like, you know, oh, however it goes, at least I get to go skiing and not be driving tow truck today, like.
Right. So I guess maybe I'll ask about the European guys. What do you think the number one guy, European guy makes just being on the tour? And let me back that up. What can you make in prize money on the tour?
Oh, not a ton, man. Not compared to racing, that's for sure.
Well, costs a lot less, but
That's
what is
true.
it to what is it to win the whole season?
I think if you
Do you know?
won every event on the whole season, you'd maybe get about 30 grand. Yeah,
Okay.
I think first place gets somewhere between 5 and 6 thousand.
Right. And do you guys get, 'cause it travel's insane. Like obviously
Yeah.
going to Georgia, like that is just mind-blowing travel. Do they help out with travel, or how do you
They once
fund
we're
that?
there, once we're there, they cover hotels and meals and lift tickets and all that stuff. But we got to get there, and then for each event, they pay everybody like a base rate. So the top four get extra, and then everybody else gets $980 just for showing up, just for making it out to. They're like, "Here's half your travel covered. Here you go, man." But
Right.
so it doesn't cover everything, but it helps. But
Huh. That's cool. It's such a different world. So again, those European guys, they're making six figures with sponsorship.
oh yeah, some of them for sure.
Right.
Yeah, they got
Right.
some pretty juicy contracts, that's for sure.
Right. And I guess what's kind of the breakdown? What are the big countries that, put effort and put an emphasis on this? Obviously Canada and the US.
Yeah, but in Europe they got in Spain and Switzerland, because right now they're trying to get the Freeride World Tour sort of style of event into the Olympics. So now
Really?
FIS is actually like running it. So that's actually how the Georgia event got sorted, because they were like, oh, if it's going to be in the Olympics, then yeah, like we'll support this event, like bring it to Georgia. So it's like, it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of confusing now, because you know there's a governing body that's not, you know, they oversee it, but like not fully. Like it's just kind of affiliated with it because they're hoping to get it into the next Olympics or two Olympics from now. But so in turn, then I think Spain and Switzerland and maybe France as well, they all have programs now where they'll like help you with funding and stuff, like government funding, like for teams. But we don't really have that in North America yet. They're not really, you know, I think it maybe until once it gets in the Olympics, maybe, but until then it's pretty you know, there's not a lot of money available for it. They don't really recognize it fully as a sport.
Right. Because it is such a, it's like any extreme sport, right? Like extreme sports start off always on the fringe and then
Yeah,
get pulled
exactly.
into the
Even like
mainstream.
slopestyle skiing 15 years ago, right? There was like pretty, you know, no money in it and no one was really paying any attention. And then now it's, you know, going crazy.
No, for sure. So I guess I want to ask you about your risk management and stuff, because it's so gnarly what you're doing. And if you ski off something straight, you can, go to the moon and
Oh
die.
yeah.
So how do you kind of assess that? Is it conscious, or is it just kind of you've done so much skiing that, okay, I can do this?
I kind of just pick something that I think looks like fun to ski. So usually it's not like too scary, but then, you know, like in Georgia, I was like, oh man, I really don't want to go to the hospital here. Like, so, you know,
Right.
kind of played a little bit in my head that, you know, I was like, I'm gonna try and do something that I'm pretty certain I can do and not, you know, not land on rocks and not have to go to a hospital in a, you know, somewhat third world country, right? Like the hospitals weren't, you know, the guy there, one of my buddies had an allergic reaction there, Stan Ray. And
Yeah.
like a couple years ago, and the doctor is smoking a cigarette while he's giving him his diagnosis and stuff. Like, you know, just pretty like, ugh.
Yeah,
So
pretty
it
old
definitely
world
plays in your
there.
head a little bit. But like, you know, when you're in Canada or like Switzerland, you're like, yeah, okay, like I can kind of go for it here. And you know, there's like the best personnel available. If you actually do get hurt or mess up or something, you're not gonna probably not gonna die there. But in Georgia, I
Right.
mean, you might.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you don't want to have something, go bad in the hospital just 'cause you're
Yeah, exactly. When you're
in the
on the
wrong
other
country.
opposite side of the world, right?
Man, oh man. Have you had a pretty bad one?
I've had shoulder surgery a couple times, but that's and I slipped my L5 disc once upon a time, but nothing too serious. But
Right.
the shoulder's kind of an ongoing nagging injury. It comes out here and there, but you know, it's not. I don't know. I'm supposed to get surgery on it again at some point, but it's kind of not really worth it while I'm doing this, I don't think.
Right, just what? Too much time to recover?
Oh no, just too much risk of it being re-injured because I've had two surgeries already. So the doctor says this last surgery is probably the last one they can do, really. It's like a bone graft surgery and it's pretty intense. And that she said, if you dislocate your shoulder after this surgery, then you're kind of SOL.
Right. Okay. Have you seen, like, obviously you're part of these events where guys are, laying it on the line. Have you seen some pretty scary stuff?
Oh yeah. Last year in New Mexico, a buddy of mine from Whistler, he had a crazy line going, and he broke his back and like knocked himself out and tumbled through some rocks and like, you know, spent a good couple of days in the hospital in New Mexico there. It was
So
pretty
they,
intense.
yeah. Yeah, so they what they carted him off like he
Yeah,
was
carted him
unconscious.
off, got a helicopter into the bottom there and picked him up. Yeah.
Man, oh man.
Yeah, there's definitely some pretty crazy stuff going down.
So tell me about like exactly how you got home from Georgia. What was like how do you end up with
Oh,
what was it 50 something hours of travel?
it was like 68.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was like from the hotel or the town we were in, it was like an 11-hour drive to the international airport. So we got a shuttle with this guy is like kind of like Uber, but the Georgian version. It's like insane, man. It's like, dude, this guy got paid like $80 to drive 20 hours round trip, more than.
No.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like after he paid the company and fuel, I was like, holy man, that's insane. But like, I mean, the dollar value is just different, right? The median wage is only like 500 USD for a month. So I guess it goes further, but still, I was like, geez, man, that's intense. But then we got to the city with the airport in it at like midnight or 1 in the morning, and our flight was at 3, or I had to be at the airport for 3:30 for a 5:30 flight. So we booked a hotel. It was like $10 for a hotel. It's crazy. And like the lady was like, oh, my buddy said he paid credit card online, and she's like, we don't take credit card. And he's like, and I was like, dude, I got cash, man. I was like, you take American? She's like, yeah, we can take American. So we
Right.
slept there for like 2 hours, and then like when we got there, I was asking this lady, I was like, hey, like, you know, we're gonna need a taxi at like 3:30 in the morning. Like, can you like help us out? Like, our phones aren't working to call any numbers here. Like, can you like get a cab here at 3:30? He's like, yes, I get taxi. And I'm like, all right, perfect. And we walk out at like 3:30 and I see this lady. I'm like, taxi? Like, is it coming? And she's like, oh yes, my husband drive you.
Right.
It was
of
like
course.
Just the other guy running the hotel. He's like, yeah, hop in, guys. And I'm like, all right, let's go. But then after that, I flew from Tbilisi to Munich in Germany there. And then I flew Munich to San Francisco. And then I was supposed to fly out later that evening, San Francisco to Vancouver. And when I got to San Francisco, Air Canada canceled my flight because it wasn't full enough.
Jeez.
Yeah. So then they wanted to keep me in San Francisco for 28 hours, fly out the next night. And I was like, dude, like, I want to go home, and I want to be home tomorrow morning, if anything. And so they sent me to LAX at midnight, spent the night in LAX, and then I flew out to LAX at 6 a.m. to Vancouver.
Man, oh, man.
But then I had to take the bus up from the airport.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was,
you could have made a YouTube video just on that.
Literally, I should have just stuck a GoPro on my head, man.
Yeah, yeah. Do you, was there a point when you know, maybe, and I'm just guessing, maybe it was when you won, you know, the Worlds, where you're like, okay, I'm all in at this? Or did you always know that, you know, even if just being a Canadian or being North American, that even if I, you know, am winning everything, it's not, you know, it's not going to be a living?
Yeah, I mean, my dad's been involved in the ski industry forever, and there's even maybe a little bit more money in the ski racing side than the free riding. So I kind of always knew that it's not really a viable career. It's more of like a fun thing to do and something that I really enjoy, but I knew I was never going to be making, you know, six figures off it or be living comfortably just by skiing.
Right.
So even when I won Junior Worlds, I was like, yeah, this is great, but I'm probably going to have to get a job at some point here.
Right. Right. So you said you're driving a tow truck, and
yeah,
I've heard that
yeah,
you drive a tow truck around Whistler.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the deal there?
Oh yeah, I was working for my buddy. He actually used to be my old babysitter when I was a kid. So I was working for him for like 3 years. But yeah, just driving around town, you know, hooking and booking, getting paid. Sometimes we weren't the nicest kind of guys. We had a lot of predatory contracts. So we were like sneaking around at night, and I'd kill the lights, shut the truck off, and go like look in your windows with a flashlight, and you know, if you didn't have a parking permit, you'd be coming with me. And in Whistler, like there's so many people that like get there and they're like, oh, Airbnb, like I'm not gonna look if there's a parking permit, and they just park and you know go out for the night, and they're like, where's my car?
So you guys, any confrontations with, you know,
drunk
tourists?
Oh yeah, man. I had one guy got in a fist fight on Boxing Day last year. Yeah, he's like throwing me on the ground and stuff and trying to like put his car down. And he's like telling me like, I'm going to put it down right now. And I told him like, no, man, like I'm not going to do that. And then he like threw me on the ground. I was like, all right, dude, like I'm going to just call the police, man. You can just pay my standby rate while we wait for the police to come. And then like the police are pulling in the lot, and he's like, I'll pay you. I was like, oh yeah, man, you're going to pay me plus my $400 standby time for sitting here for an hour. And the cops were like, yeah, man, either you pay him or he charges you with assault and he tows your car away.
Probably a pretty good day.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, making commission on that, you can't complain.
Yeah, that's good. So how did you treat this season? Were you like, okay, you're taking as much time off work, like treating it like a pro athlete, like I am, you know, you are a pro athlete technically.
Yeah, I mean, I stopped working just before Christmas this year. So I've been off for 3 months now. But it kind of felt pretty weird, man. It's weird to not have a boss to be calling you every time you're back asking you to come in.
Right. And then what'd you do for like training, fitness, kind of your program? Did you just, you know, loosely put that together? Did you have someone helping you out?
It was pretty, pretty loose. Just, you know, going to the gym as much as I can and skiing kind of as much as I can. Just, you know, building the muscle memory of, you know, how to ski and ski properly and make it, you know, make it look good.
Right. Right. Were you doing like some filming or like, cause it's funny, like skiing is definitely, well, obviously you're judged. It's a performative sport. But you don't get to see yourself doing it unless you're filmed, right? Were you doing any of that?
No, I was mostly just skiing just because we didn't have a really great start of the winter.
Right.
So it was kind of like, there was mostly just groomers until like January. And then I skied like seven times and I was like, oh, time to go to Europe now. Like got better, better get my legs going here. Well, and
Right.
before I went to Europe, they had like already called off the first event. But I already had flights booked and everything. So me and my girlfriend, we went to Europe and I was like, oh, this is awesome. It's going to be just a vacation. Like they're definitely going to cancel the second event too. Like cause they're the two resorts were like 50 kilometers apart and they both had no snow. And then we're like in France, just like chilling. And then they're like, oh yeah, you got to get to Switzerland in 3 days for this event. And I was like, what? And I like looked at maps. I was like 11 hour drive. I was like, awesome. I was like, this is great. Across Europe, like we literally drove across all of France and half of Switzerland to get there.
Wow. Man, oh man. Huh. So were you, you know, I guess as far as prepping, it was really, really just skiing. Are you doing, I don't know how nagging your injury is. Are you doing stuff kind of constantly throughout the season for, you know, just injury prevention? Are you getting in the sauna? Are you doing stuff like that?
I hit the hot tub and sauna when I can, but every day when I go skiing, I wear like a back brace, like a lumbar support brace. And like if I ski without it, I can't walk for like a week. So
really?
that's pretty necessary. Yeah. I'll go up without it by accident and I can do one run and then I'm like, all right, I gotta go home or else I'm not skiing for like a month. So that's
is that from hurting your back?
Yeah. Yeah. I slipped my L5, 5 years ago. I think, two years ago, I actually didn't even ski at all. I couldn't ski for the whole year. So not even just not compete. I like didn't like, I skied like 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah. So last year was kind of like my first year, like fully competing again. So it was like felt pretty good to, you know, to actually make it after being totally off for a couple of years.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. So what does the rest of the winter look like for you?
I got back from Colorado yesterday. And then me and Coops, my twin brother, were driving back to Colorado on Saturday.
Okay.
It's super weird, man. They put two events in Colorado, but put like 10 days in between them. And they're only like 4 hours apart. It's like, dude, like they were all going home and we were like already right there. Like, come on, man. Why are you doing this to us? But
man,
so we'll go to Silverton if you've heard of that place.
I've heard of it. I don't know where it is.
Yeah, it's like kind of near Telluride. It's like an hour as the crow. It's like 15 kilometers as the crow flies.
Okay.
But it's they got one chairlift there, and it's only open for guided skiing normally,
cool.
Just because it's like a backcountry like heli resort sort of with like one chairlift. But so they booked out the whole resort for a couple of days for the event, and it's like it's the first event they've ever had there. So it should be pretty sick. The venue looks actually pretty legit. And then, after that, we're going to California for the last one. But on the way over, we got a couple of days, so we're gonna stop in Vegas for a little R&R.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, get some sun for two nights.
Yeah, right on. So that's the rest of the season for you, and if things go well, you're hopefully back.
Yeah,
in the
if I end up top
again.
Four, I'll be back on the tour again. But if not, then I'll be back just, you know, back around North America. Hopefully, you know, be able to get a wild card onto the challengers next year and then spend most of my year sledding and filming and, you know, doing a little more stuff that I'm kind of more excited about.
Sure.
Competing's fun, but it's like, it's, you know, I've probably been home for about 2 weeks since January 10th. So it's a lot of time for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess what is the goal, you know, the long-term goal with skiing? Is it, you know, just continue to compete as high as you can and have fun. And you mentioned filming and sledding.
Yeah, I'd like to do some more filming and sledding and stuff. And, you know, compete as long as I'm still enjoying it. But, you know, once I stop having fun, then I'm not afraid to hang up the boots for the competing side and just have fun with it. I've definitely had more fun not competing than competing sometimes. But right now I'm still enjoying it. So I'd like to give it another shot for a couple more years, see if I can land myself back on the tour once more before I throw in the hat.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it's funny. It's one of those sports, you know, hockey or, you know, most sports, to do it is to compete. Whereas the majority of skiers is just going out and skiing. And it's pretty rare that someone, you know, gets outside recognition for their skiing ability, right? And so that's got to be.
Especially if you're just skiing, not, you know, don't film at all or anything. It's like, nobody will ever really see a ski unless they're on the ski hill with you, right?
Right, right. So is that an aspect that you enjoy? Like, you know, you're obviously super talented, and you know, you get to actually see how you stack up.
Yeah, it's definitely nice to know, you know, kind of know where you sit, like worldwide, like, you know, like being, say, 15th in the world, I guess, after the World Tour. That's like kind of a crazy thing to be able to say.
Yeah.
And to even be able to say last year I was number two in Canada and number three in North America is like pretty, you know, it definitely feels pretty good. It kind of feels like it makes it all worthwhile a little bit. All the time I spent over the years, like to be able to stack up against everybody else in the world.
Yeah, for sure. And that's something that you get even compared to, you know, someone who's, you know, a super talented guy that puts out a movie part. He still doesn't get that you're ranked here.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like, you know, I'm sure a lot of the movie guys could be ranked pretty highly, but they, you know, they just have different interests, right? They're invested in other things, which is fine by me, man. You know, some of those guys could definitely whoop my ass, but.
Yep. But they go out and ski the best conditions, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of hard to tell sometimes, you know, maybe they probably wouldn't really want to be skiing cliffs on the hard pack. So,
yeah. Oh, that's good, man. I appreciate you taking the time. I ask all my guests a piece of advice at the end. So specifically for you, I mean, you know, if there's young aspiring skiers that want to, I guess just have, you know, maybe it's make a living, maybe it's not, but, you know, have longevity in the sport. What kind of advice are you giving them?
I think the most important thing to do is just, you know, have fun with it and don't take yourself too seriously. At the end of the day, it's, you know, it's just skiing. It's not make or break. Like, if you make a living off it, that's awesome. But if you're having fun with it, you're doing something right.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it's one of those sports you can do till you're 95.
Yeah, exactly. As long as, you know, you don't hurt yourself too bad, you can keep skiing till the day you die, pretty much.
Yeah. That's good. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Right on. That was good.
Yeah, buddy. Cool. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's cool. We watched all your stops. We were actually in Japan with a bunch of buddies and
hell yeah.
We put it on at night, watched nice, all the highlights. Yeah, yeah. Watch your run.
Hell yeah. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Good luck. Yeah. Good luck this year. Good
Thanks,
luck next
man.
Year.
Yeah, we'll have to go skiing sometime again. See you next time you're back out west.
100%. My sleds are sitting in a trailer in Revy right now. We didn't get out this year.
There you go. Maybe next year, eh? Maybe we'll have a better winter and you'll have to come out.
Yeah. Yeah. And with all our buddies from Revy are living in Van now, so they're skiing Whistler.
No, sick. Well, there you go. Well, if you ever come out to Whistler, man, you always got a place to stay. We can go sledding.
Right on. Yeah, we'll try and do it next year.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. We'll talk to you later. Peace.
All right. Adios. Hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. If you like it, please subscribe and send it to some friends.